I need to tell you something I am not proud of. I have read Romans 8 more times than I can count, and I have treated verses 19 through 21 like a bridge. The part of the highway you drive over on the way to the good stuff. Verse 18. Suffering is not worth comparing to glory. Great. Verse 28. All things work together. Even better. But the three verses in between? I skimmed them. And I think I moved on because what those verses actually say is harder than what comes before or after. But that is not where I want to start. I want to start where you are, because I think the passage meets you there before it meets you in the Greek. It is late September, and the heat finally broke. You are standing on the front porch, maybe a Monday, and the air has that first hint of fall, the kind of evening that is supposed to feel like relief. And you are looking at the yard, the street, the sky going orange at the edges, and something in you notices how beautiful it is, and something else in you notices how temporary it is. The leaves are already curling. The garden you planted in May is done. The dog is slower this year than last year. Your dad sounded different on the phone this morning. Not wrong, just older. And there is this question that shows up on evenings like that, uninvited. You do not say it out loud, but it is there. It sounds something like, if God is doing what the Bible says he is doing, why does everything around me act like he is not? Why does it all just run down? Not the dramatic kind of broken, not a catastrophe, just the ordinary kind, entropy, the slow leak, the way effort does not accumulate into anything that stays. You mow the lawn and it grows back. You fix the porch railing and the gutter rusts. You raise the kids right and they still get hurt. It is not that any one thing is devastating. It is that the direction of everything physical is always the same direction, toward less, toward dissolution, toward the ground. And the question that lives underneath that, the one you probably would not say in church, is whether the decay means something, whether it is evidence, whether the slow unraveling of every material thing is the universe's quiet testimony that whatever God is doing, he is doing it somewhere else, not here, not in the soil, not in the body, not in the thing you can touch. That question, I want you to hold it. Do not answer it yet. Because Paul heard it too, and his answer is not what I expected. There is a detail in the Greek that I did not catch the first three times through this passage. Verse 19. Paul says creation waits with, and the English just says eager longing or eager expectation. Fine. But the Greek word is apokeradokia, and this word is almost certainly something Paul coined. It shows up twice in the entire New Testament, here and in Philippians 1, and nowhere else in surviving Greek literature from the period. It is a compound. Apo, away from. Kara, the head. Dokeo, to watch. The image is someone craning their neck forward, stretching past everything in the foreground, eyes locked on the horizon. Not sitting. Not waiting politely. Straining. Almost trembling. The way a crowd at the ancient games leans forward to see who crosses the finish line. And Paul uses this word. This physically intense, neck-straining, almost painful word for the non-human creation, for rocks and rivers and roots and stars. Creation is not passively waiting for God to fix things. Creation is leaning. It has a posture, and the posture is forward. Now, what is creation leaning toward? This is where it gets strange. Paul does not say creation is waiting for God to intervene. He does not say creation is waiting for an angel to descend, or for a cosmic reset, or for the heavens to open. He says creation is waiting for the apocalypsis, the unveiling of the sons of God. Apocalypsis, from apo, away from, and calypto, to cover. To remove a veil from something that already exists underneath it. Paul is not saying that at the end of all things, God will create his glorified children. He is saying God will reveal them. They are already there, hidden, covered, not yet visible, but real. And the universe, the actual physical cosmos, is craning its neck to see the curtain come down. That means something I do not think we sit with long enough, if apocalypsis is the right word, and Paul chose it carefully, because Paul always chooses carefully, then you are not becoming a child of God at some future point. You already are one. The identity is complete. What has not happened yet is the unveiling, the moment the rest of creation gets to see what has been true all along. But there is a harder word in verse 20, mateotes, translated futility in most English Bibles, frustration in a few. And this word carries a very specific echo that Paul knows his audience will hear in the Greek Old Testament, the Septuagint. Mateotes is the word that translates hevel in Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities, the preacher says. All is hevel, breath, vapor. The thing that is there for a second and then is not. Effort that does not accumulate. Seasons that cycle but never arrive. The sun rises, the sun sets, the rivers run to the sea, and the sea is never full. When Paul says creation was subjected to Mateotes, he is pulling that entire tradition into his argument. He is saying, the preacher was right. Everything under the sun is futile. The observation is correct, but the preacher could not tell you why. Ecclesiastes catalogs the problem exhaustively, 12 chapters of it, and then lands on fear God and keep his commandments, which is a posture, not an explanation. Paul names what Ecclesiastes could not. He says creation was subjected to this futility. And then he uses a verb that changes everything, hyptag, aorist, passive. A single act, completed in the past, performed by an agent who is not creation itself. Creation did not break itself. Creation was broken by someone. And the passive voice, the aorist tense, the phrase, not of its own will. All of it points back to Genesis 3. Cursed is the ground because of you. God cursed the ground, not as punishment for the ground. As a judicial consequence of human rebellion, the earth became collateral damage in a sentence handed to Adam. And that reframes the whole thing. If creation subjected itself to futility, if decay is just what matter does, then the material world is fundamentally defective and escape is the only play. That is Plato. Soul leaves the body, spirit leaves the world, and matter was always the problem. But if God subjected creation, deliberately, judicially, as an act with a purpose, then the decay is not a design flaw. It is a sentence. And sentences have end dates. That is the phrase in Paul's Greek I keep returning to. Two prepositional phrases sitting in the same sentence, modifying the same act. To Mateotes, to futility, in ep elpidi, in hope. Subjected to purposelessness on the basis of hope. The sentence included the pardon. The futility was imposed with the liberation already in view. English cannot hold these two ideas in the same breath the way the Greek does. Subjected to futility and hope sounds like two separate clauses awkwardly glued together. In Paul's construction, they are a single paradox. A judge who sentences the prisoner and hands the parole officer the release papers in the same motion. This is where the canonical connection lands hardest for me. Genesis 3 gives us the origin of the sentence. The ground is cursed because of Adam. But Genesis 3 does not tell us the sentence was temporary. It includes the proto-evangelium, the promise that the seed of the woman will crush the serpent's head. But it does not connect that promise to the earth's own freedom. Paul does. And Isaiah 65 gives us the destination. New heavens and new earth. People building houses and actually living in them. Planting vineyards and actually eating the fruit. The wolf and the lamb feeding together. Isaiah's vision is not ethereal. It is not clouds and harps. It is material. Labor that lasts. Things that stay built. Romans 8 sits between Genesis and Isaiah and provides the piece neither of them names, the mechanism. What triggers creation's liberation? And the answer is not a divine decree from above with no connection to human history. The answer is you. The revealing of the sons of God. Your completed glorification. Your identity made visible. Is the event that unlocks the entire material order. Which means the cosmos has a stake in what happens to you. That sentence should stop us. The physical universe. Rocks. Oceans. The cellular machinery inside every living thing. Is not scenery for a human redemption story. It is a co-participant, waiting for the same event, straining toward the same horizon. And the event it is waiting for is not a cosmic reset performed over its head. It is the moment you are finally, fully, publicly revealed as what you already are. Paul even specifies what creation gets when that happens. Verse 21. Eleutheria, freedom. The same word he uses for your freedom from sin in Romans 6. The same word he uses for freedom from the law in Galatians 5. You free a prisoner. You do not free a prop. If creation were disposable, if God planned to scrap the material world and start over, Eleutheria is the wrong word. You liberate something that has value, something that belongs, something whose captivity is an injustice being corrected. And the freedom Paul names is specific. Creation will be freed from the slavery of decay, dulias tes phthoras. Phthora means decomposition, rot, biological death, the autumn that is beautiful on the porch, the leaves turning gold. Paul calls that slavery, not poetic, not the circle of life, bondage. The slow dissolving of everything material is not something to romanticize. It is a condition to be liberated from. So, back to the porch. Back to the Monday evening with the light going sideways and the yard looking tired and your dad's voice sounding older. Back to the question you did not say out loud. Does the decay mean something? Is the slow running down of every physical thing evidence that God is working somewhere else? Not here? Not in the soil? Not in the body? Paul's answer is no. The decay is not evidence of God's absence. It is evidence of God's sentence. A sentence imposed judicially, deliberately, with its own expiration date written into the judgment. The running down is real. The futility is real. But it is the sound of a world in labor, not a world in its death throes. You are standing on the porch and the light is fading, and everything you can see, the cracked sidewalk, the overgrown hedge, the dog who cannot take the long walk anymore, all of it is leaning forward, neck outstretched, apokaradokia, straining toward a morning you cannot see yet, but that is already written into the sentence that made this evening feel so heavy. And the strangest part, the part I am not sure I know what to do with yet, is that the morning it is leaning toward depends on you. Does the labor know?